Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Predators can go after multiple kids online, right? They can be having conversations with many individuals. And what they really do is they ingratiate themselves, right? So the concept of teaching kids stranger danger doesn't really work, right? Because by the time that these individuals are exploiting our children, they're not strangers anymore.
Welcome to the Becoming Her podcast with me, Nikki Spolstra. This is a space where we explore the human experience and the challenges, obstacles, and resiliency that shape who we are. Alongside expert guests and featured friends, I am here to host meaningful conversations that tackle life's complex challenges with humor, grace, and a little bit of sass. You are here for a reason, for the collective growth, so we may deepen our understanding of ourselves and the world around us.
Welcome back, everyone. Erin Williamson is here today, and she is the Chief Programs and Strategy Officer at Love 146, where she leads efforts to prevent child trafficking and exploitation. With over 20 years of experience in social services and child protection, Erin has developed trauma-informed programs that have reached thousands of vulnerable youth across the U.S. She is also a parent, advocate, and expert in human trafficking prevention and survivor care. So for the listeners who've been in my audience, who have been with me since day one of the show, you might remember that my very first interview was with Florida Senator Lauren Book, who has dedicated most of her life to helping survivors of childhood sexual abuse heal, recover, and thrive while providing the education and resources to safe adults and tools for survivors to speak up. So that said, this is a topic that is very personal to me. And while Becoming Her has gone through a transformation of sorts in a similar way that I have, you know, we still have to address some of these topics. And I think part of it is that I've come to address topics with a little more ease, grace, and sass and humor. This is still and always will be a very important topic for me to cover. So parenting is a big part of the Becoming Her umbrella, whether you are a parent or not. So I'm really honored today to speak with Erin Williamson about her experience in fighting child trafficking and exploitation and in protecting vulnerable youth. So Erin, thank you so much for being here. I'm excited for our chat today. Hopefully we can bring a lot of awareness to people at large, but specifically parents, which is a huge part of my demographic in my audience.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. And I agree. It is a topic that unfortunately, as parents, we have to be aware of. I know it's a hard topic to talk about, but a really, really important one.
So Erin, it's interesting because like the transition of where my show has gone has really been, it used to be a lot of like this heavy material, right? Heavy material. And then as I evolved as a person and I started going through my own healing journey with this specific topic really, but in so many other areas of life, I've started to bring these topics up, or topics in general. I haven't done it yet with this one, but like a lot more like lightness, right? And that's really hard to do when you're talking about something as serious as child trafficking, sexual abuse, child exploitation. It's not an easy topic to cover. It is not sexy. It is not fun, right? But we still need to talk about it. That's the thing. We still need to talk about it. So it's like the elephant in the room that you don't want to talk to your kid about sex. It's uncomfortable for the parent, but it's something that needs to get done, you know? You got to do it.
And the reality is that when we talk especially about trafficking prevention, that's everything from like talking to kids about getting their first cell phone to talking with kids about going online, right? That's all part of trafficking prevention. And we're doing it no matter what, right? Kids get first cell phones. Kids go online. Kids go on the internet. And so if you can just start doing what you're already doing and have this information come alongside it, it can just add some additional protective factors when you're helping your own children, you know, navigate the world. Because trafficking is, it's kind of that thing that flies right under the radar. It is there. It exists in a way that we're unaware of, but it's not this totally separate thing where you now need to say, you know, we're going to dedicate tonight's dinner conversation to this, right? You can sparse it out throughout other normative conversations that you're already having with your children.
So I want to get into all of that. I want to talk about also like the load that it puts on parents, right? Where you can get into this space of like constant worry, right? And like going about living your life, like having the information and being able to move through life, feeling confident and safe while having this information, but also not like in a constant state of fear, which we know is not good for our nervous systems. So we're going to get into all of that. But before we do, I want to hear about how you got started in this industry and about your time in Kenya. So if you could tell us a little bit about that, just to give us some context about where this conversation is going to lead ultimately.
Sure. So yeah, I have been doing this work really since I was in college. You know, for my semester abroad in college, I went to Kenya. I was on this amazing program. And as part of it, for your last month in the country, you kind of went off and chose a subject that you wanted to kind of learn more about. And I was always just amazed at how many children were living on the streets and really, really quite young by themselves. And so I actually worked with two groups that worked with street children. And in working with the street children, the girls in particular would tell me stories that the way for them to stay safest was to either be kind of a group of girls that had an older male that trafficked them, really sold them for sex, but also offered protection. Or they were kind of what was considered a wife to a group of boys where they would forage for food, but also, you know, engage in sexual relations with some of the boys. And that was the safest because at that time, the Kenyan police were just really brutal and would oftentimes force them to engage in sexual acts and then throw them into jail where they also experienced sexual violence. And so I really came back to the United States and began focusing on street children. I again went to, after I graduated, went to Mexico and did similar work, and then got into kind of looking at child sex tourism, because that's what we were seeing a lot of in Mexico, where people traveling to engage in sexual relations with children. And then from there, really became apparent of what was happening in the US. So my journey takes the form that many people's had, where we initially think about trafficking over there in other countries.
It doesn't happen here, right? Like that's the mentality. It's those countries. It's over there. It's not happening here.
So common. Yeah. Many people, kind of are first aware that it happens somewhere in the world, but they're very shocked to hear that it happens here in the United States and happens at the level and prevalence that we're seeing it.
When it's happening here, is it just street kids?
No. Actually, the majority of children that are referred to our organization for services are actually living at home and they're living with
wild.
Their parents.
Yep. This is wild.
And some of our children are certainly system involved. Some are in the child welfare system. Some are in the juvenile justice system. But most are living at home when they're first referred to us. And many times the parents are unaware of what's happening, right? They might think that their child is being defiant or that their child isn't listening. Sometimes it's parents that are working two jobs to support their family. Sometimes, although I will say we've had kids of kind of every single socioeconomic status. You know, we've also have parents that are so invested in their work and work such long hours that their children then are spending a lot of time online and unsupervised online. So there's no single demographic that experiences this form of victimization. And it really is important to talk to your children about kind of healthy relationships, predatory behavior, because again, even if it doesn't fall into, trafficking, there's all of these other levels of victimization that can happen up to trafficking, right? Unhealthy dating relationships, explicit images, taking explicit images of your significant other, you know, revenge pornography we see. And many times those things are precursors to what we will ultimately see when we see the trafficking victimization.
So there's a lot here, right? Like, where do we begin?
Right.
But when we think about your experience overseas, and I'm just hearing you say like that these girls, right? Not necessarily grown women, and maybe there are some grown women, but what we're talking about here in this pocket is girls, young girls seeking survival, right? Like they, yes. It's almost like a survival mechanism. And I've done a lot of work of recovering from my own survival behaviors, right? And so this is so relevant because what survival does to your nervous system is so overwhelming and so hard to overcome. And people think, oh yeah, you're surviving. Like, well, what did you survive? A broken heart? Like survival, what it does on the insides, it destroys you from the inside in a way that, and destruction, I don't mean, oh my gosh, it ruins you, but it's like, it makes you operate in life in a much different way that you're never safe. Like you, whether that's emotionally, psychologically, or physically, you're always operating from a place of, I am not safe. How do I survive the situation? And so all of your choices thereafter are about like, how am I going to survive? And like, listen, this has been going on for all of humanity, right? Where women, you sought the chief of the tribe because that was your protection, just as the chief sought out the woman who he was most likely to procreate with and carry on his line. Everybody has been seeking some sort of survival since the beginning of mankind, humankind, right? This is a different level. The world has changed since then. And now I'm hearing you talk about young women, young girls who cannot survive on the streets without a pimp, essentially, who will protect them. Or because even the security systems that are in place are going to do the same thing to them and give them a worse, potentially worse outcome.
Yeah. And that is what we saw in Kenya. That is what I saw. I will say, you know, there, I remember going to an island off of the, main area where this was also happening with boys, right? And so
there's not enough conversation happening about how boys are affected.
Exactly.
I will say that.
And so parents should be aware that we do see trafficking among boys. We do see boys exploited, and in part because of the shame that can go and the idea of what does sexual violence for boys and men look like? We don't see as much disclosure as we think there is in terms of the level of victimization. So please, when you're thinking about having these conversations, you know, don't just have them with your girls, also have them with your boys, and don't always assume that your boys can't also be a victim of a violent crime or a victim of kind of sexual perpetration, because we do see that happening, unfortunately.
So when I got pregnant with my first son, when I became pregnant during my first pregnancy and I found out I was having a boy, I read this book. I think it's called Raising Boys. I'm going to double check the title on that. But it was basically all about that, about how boys are susceptible and how shame plays such a huge role. In it. I mean, this kid, I could go on another tangent about it, about how like things that happen in locker rooms and the assault that goes on behind closed doors that boys will often never talk about because there's so much shame involved in it, especially if it's like boy on boy behavior, right?
Yeah.
And so there is something that to be said about that. It was a horrifying read for me because of the graphic details that were going on. But I will say that as a parent, I think that an informed parent is always going to be in a better position, even if it's hard to hear the information. Because some of this stuff, it's hard to listen to. It really just,
Yes.
There's no way around it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you have to figure out, to your point of self-care, you know, my husband does pediatric neuro-oncology, right? He deals with kids who have brain cancer, right? We come home and, you know, he might be worried that our kids are always going to get sick. And I'm worried that our kids are always going to, we have to figure out how to raise children having the knowledge that we have. And we don't want to raise our children to be scared of the world, right? So there, you have to have the knowledge, but you also then have to be able to compartmentalize the knowledge and use it for good and not let it become so overwhelming that it clouds your vision of what an amazing world we do live in.
Yeah, that's right. So talk to me about what's happening here then. Like, how is this happening? How does it even happen?
Yeah. So we see it in many different ways, right? I think one of the ways that we're definitely seeing it is we see children who have vulnerabilities who go online and, you know, children overshare, right? This is a generation where they're still navigating what is private, what is personal. Some of them think that their personal lives happen also online, right? And they really do overshare. And the difference with what we see in person versus online is that predators can go after multiple kids online, right? They can be having conversations with many individuals. And what they really do is they ingratiate themselves, right? So the concept of teaching kids stranger danger doesn't really work, right? Because by the time that these individuals are exploiting our children, they're not strangers anymore, right?
Whoa.
They're boyfriends. Whoa. They're friends. They're best friends. Right. So we have to stop using that stranger. Don't talk to strangers online, because that is not how these kids view them. And if that's who they think is going to exploit them, then they'll say, well, this person's safe because they're not a stranger to me anymore. I've been talking to them for 3 months. Right. And so we really have to change and shift how we talk about who can exploit them. And one of the things, unfortunately, we have to say is that sometimes people who want to take advantage of children purposely try to form relationships with children in order to do that, right? They purposely become coaches or teachers, or they, you know, they meet you online and they become your boyfriends, or they say, and the problem is that, the other thing we have to share is in that first conversation, in that first meeting, on that first date, there's nothing usually that should warn you that this is somebody that's going to take advantage of you, right?
Right.
If you went on a first date and someone hit you on that first date, you would be like, this is not a cool guy. I'm not going to go on a second date. That's not how, right, teen dating violence works or domestic violence works, right? First, they're romantic and they're amazing and they compliment you and they might buy you little things, or they pay additional attention to you that you crave, or they say, here's a safe place you can come to if you ever get in a fight with your parent, or whatever they are promising you. They're seeing a gap in that child's life and they're trying to fill it, right?
Mm. Yeah.
And they really are becoming close to that child. And then they'll slowly test those boundaries, right? And traffickers will say, I will move as fast or as slow as that child lets me, right? I take my cues from the child. So if that child's saying, I got to get away from my house, I'm, fighting with my parents, I need to get out of here, great, I will come and pick you up. But if that child says, I can't, my parents will be really mad at me, my parents are going to, they expect me home, great. You know what? I might even go meet those parents. I might even, say, introduce.
Crazy.
Absolutely. I might introduce myself so that when I then drop your child off late one day, you think, well, he's a good guy. He's not, I'll give him. Normally, I like to have her home by 10. This is 10:30. I know who she's with. I know it's safe, right? So we do have to kind of watch for these warning signs and, again, really share with our children that, first of all, we're going to set rules, right? We're going to set rules about who you talk about online. We're going to set rules about who you go out with. The most important thing for us to tell, especially our adolescents, is part of normal adolescent development is that you're going to break some of those rules. That I'm not saying I want you to break those rules. I'm not saying that you should break those rules, but I know that you might push boundaries and break those rules. And I want you to know that above all else, the most important thing for me is not the rule, it's your safety. And so if you've broken a rule, but now you find yourself in an unsafe situation or you're worried about it, call me. Reach out. Let's figure this out together. I'm not worried about the rule at that time. We'll figure that out. But a lot of times what we have kids say to us is, I didn't want to tell my parent, or I didn't want to, because I had, and then they will name the rule that they broke. And traffickers will use that against them. They'll say to them, well, what are your parents going to say? Your parents always told you to never send pictures, and you sent me a, but what if I sent that picture back to them? What would they say? What would they think about you? Right? So they use those rules that we give and those instructions that we give to kids to leverage and to to pull our kids away from us and to exploit them.
Like high level psychological manipulation at play.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, I think that like this is really important for parents to hear what you just said is that like when it comes down to this, really knowing, okay, you're going to set rules for your kids and talking to your kids. Like, I understand that you might break some of these rules. Okay, we will deal with it together. Yeah. Together, like no matter what, you can come talk to me, even if you break the rule. Like that'll be a different conversation, but we're going to get through this together.
Even though we're talking about this within the context of trafficking, that this applies for so many other things.
So many
right?
things. I truly right now, Erin, I have my own anxiety creeping up from my own childhood and adolescent experiences, which I've talked about a little bit on the show. I'll tag those episodes if anybody's curious. I even just having this conversation, it's like a flashback of like, oh my gosh, those things happened. And I had those feelings of not being able to talk to my parents about XYZ and because of the rule breaking. It even takes me back to like early days of the internet, like AOL Instant Messenger, AIM. Yep. You go in a group chat and everybody's like age, sex, location. And I'm like 10, but I'm like, I'm 17 because I think being 10 is like not cool and I'm curious and whatever it is, you know, I mean, you think about how you have conversations with kids about this. I remember thinking there's a couple personal examples that I do want to bring up because I think they're relevant in like a real life context that this happens to real life people.
Yep.
One is I used to be a dance coach in an inner city middle school. And I remember thinking there were days like you're not supposed to drive kids home. Like, it's like a rule. You're not supposed to drive kids home, right? And I'm in an inner city middle school in the middle of Little Havana where there's all kinds of nonsense going on down the corner, right? And I have these girls that are in their ballet uniforms and they're waiting for their Uber to take them wherever, or they're just waiting for whomever to pick them up. And I'm like, as a safe adult, what do I do? I'm like, what do I do? You know, and fortunately I was in a position where I had great communication with the parents, but it's like, even hearing what you said, it's like that coach who has communication with the parents, but I'm like, I'd rather have my kid, like my athlete get in my car and go straight to their house where I drop them off and I see their parent. I say hi, bye, then leave them on that corner street, getting in God knows whose car, doing God knows who what, you know? And it's such a crazy balance to consider from a parenting standpoint of like who the safe adults are in your child's life and like, how do you do it?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, one of the most important things to also recognize is that you can do everything right and you still can't 100% protect, right? So, you know, I think that we have this false belief as parents that if we make the right decisions, if we do everything correct, nothing bad will happen to our children. And what I can say is that you can help protect them for sure. You can help empower them for sure. But you can't 100% promise them or yourself that nothing bad is going to happen to them. And that is terrifying, right? It is terrifying to think that we don't have that level of control and ability to protect our children. But I also think that that is what offers resiliency, right? Is one of the things that's really important to remember is that God forbid the worst of the worst happened to your child. And that might be trafficking, but that could also mean a wide variety of other things. Talking and working through that with your child, having your child know that they're not alone, that you are there to support them, that whatever happened does not define who they are or the rest of their life or who they will become. There is a level of protection that you want your children to also know they will always have. God forbid anything happen to them, that you will be there to walk through that with them. And that's whether that happens to them at 9, at 19, or at 29, because the reality is that's still your child, right? And so something might happen at 29 and you want your child to know they can come home and they can talk to you about it and you will be with them and you will support them and you will remind them that this is not who they are. This does not define them. They did not do anything wrong. I said to one of my friends, I don't care if you ran down the street naked. If somebody raped you, it is not your fault. It is the fault of whoever took advantage of you. Am I saying you made the best decisions you could have? Probably not. It probably wasn't the best decision, but it still wasn't your fault, right? And so I think we have to think of this twofold. One is, how do we give our children the best protection possible? It's actually threefold. How do we give them the best protection possible? How do we then allow ourselves and allow them to release, to live life, to have all these experiences? And then how do we prepare or think about, or how are we there for our kids? God forbid something happens. You know, I always say it's kind of like, you know, teaching your child to cross the street. Right? Mm-hmm. You're not going to start at a busy intersection. You're going to start at a small road, hold their hand, look both ways. But as they get older, the goal is that at some point they can cross a busy intersection by themselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So a long time ago, I interviewed a trauma specialist, a psychologist. Her name is Dr. Andrea Loeb. And she said that one of the biggest determining factors of whether a adult person is able to recover from childhood sexual abuse, or in this case, trafficking, or, you know, anything in this mm-hmm. world, anything really, is yeah. whether, when they come forward, whether or not they are believed.
100%.
Because she gave these two examples of like a benign sexual experience, not benign, but like a, you know, like a, maybe a subjectively less severe sexual form of sexual abuse occurring in a family system versus a more severe.
Yep.
And then the person with the less severe came forward, but was believed about it. But the person with the more severe experience wasn't believed. And that person, like, they're healing.
Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers. But that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Healing journeys are drastically different, you know, and that comes back at, like, to shame and judgment and self-worth. And like, did this really happen? I remember thinking in my life, did I make that up? Mm-hmm. Did I make it up? The mind plays tricks on you, especially if you're in an environment where you're not believed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have had kids who have literally said to us, the trafficking wasn't the worst thing that happened to me.
Wow.
The worst thing that happened to me was that I was raped when I was 10. And when I told my mom, she said, no, you weren't. Or she said, well, what were you wearing? Either they didn't believe me or they blame me. The trafficking was nothing.
Wow.
It was the fact that my mom wasn't there for me. Or didn't believe me, or thought it was my fault. That was worse.
If you're looking for deeper connection, check out the Becoming Her exclusive online community, where you will meet with me and other like-minded, mission-centered women who are on the journey to the biggest, most glorious homecoming and glow up. You can connect with me personally on Instagram at Nikki Sapsbo and @wearebecoming_her. For more information on all of the things, visit NikkiSpo.com.
As parents, when we know better, we do better, right? Like, my generation of parents made their mistakes and their parents made their mistakes, right? And so my generation of parents, us as parents, right? We have a lot of information thanks to the internet, right? So we have vast resources on how we can improve our parenting styles. Psychology and mental health is so much more common and accepted, well accepted in communities, right? So we're having these conversations with a lot more ease and grace, which is important, right? And it's wild because I always think about it still. I'm like, I could be the most evolved parent and my child will probably still go to his or her therapist someday and be like, well, my mom fucked me up in this
Absolutely.
Way. Like, she did this one thing
Absolutely.
That I don't even know that I'm doing, right? Yep. And that's going to be the one thing. And I'm like, I did all the things. I thought I did all the things, right? Like, I'd really tried my best. And the reality is that parents are imperfect, right? And so you think about this parent who said, no, you weren't. Like, I look at it and like, I judge that. And I'm like, how could you not have listened to your child? But it's like, that parent doesn't even know what they don't know. Like, they don't have the tools and resources to even be equipped to handle this situation. And that's such a shame. It is such a shame. And it is exactly why we talk about these things, right? For the people who, like, you, I don't care. Maybe this conversation doesn't directly apply to you. You send it to a friend. Like, you send it to somebody who maybe it applies to, or who is uncomfortable to talk about these things, because a lot of the parents simply don't have the emotional advancement. Like, they don't have it in them yet to even face it. It's easier to put your head in the sand. It's just easier to put your head in the sand. It's easier.
And sometimes it's a trauma response on the parent's part.
Absolutely.
Too, right?
Absolutely.
Like, that parent might have experienced their own sexual violence or victimization and have promised themselves that their child would never go through what they went through. And their brain just cannot comprehend that their child, who they swore this was not going to happen to, is now telling them this. And their immediate response is, no, it didn't. No, it didn't. I can't. I can't emotionally. I can't mentally handle this. And I think that, you know, there are, when you look at the statistics, the reality is 1 in 4 women experiences sexual violence before age of 18, right? 1 in 6 men is what they say. And so when we think about that, there's a lot of parents out there who have experienced, yeah, and that's just sexual victimization, let alone right, other forms of violence and victimization. And so it's not uncommon for parents to have their own trauma response when raising their children. I also want to say, we all make mistakes, to your point.
Yeah.
Right? For sure have had a reaction to my kid where I've had to go back and be like, I did not handle that the best way. I am sorry. I should not have yelled. I should not have said this. I should not, and apologize. And but I also think, again, we're teaching our children then we're fallible. We're going to mess up. We don't expect ourselves to be perfect. We don't expect you to be perfect. You know, we're all trying to figure out life. And I think showing that to children also has great value and benefit.
I think that that's something that our generation is actually getting a lot better at than the generations before us. Like parenting before was very much like, oh, if a child asked why, because I said so. It was just because I said so. Like, that's it. That's the rule. What I say is the rule. Parents, I think, were parenting from a place of a little bit more ego, right? And that's what was demonstrated to them. And till this day, like, I have a really good relationship with my dad. He listens to my shows, so I know he'll pick up on this. But, like, I'm not getting an apology from that dude about something that happened from when I was a kid. Like, I accept that, right? Mm-hmm. Now as an adult, I know what I know. But I'm like, there's no, I'm sorry. One of the most valuable things that I have learned in parenting so far, and I'm still learning, is the power of remedying conflict with your child through apologizing and demonstrating what that can look like. Reconciliation, what healthy reconciliation can look like, honoring when I've done something wrong, demystifying the parent as a deity, right? Because we're born into this world and it is natural for us to deify our parents, right? We think that they are gods and they can do no wrong and they know everything. And there are so many times, Erin, that I talk to my kids when I mess up and I'm like, guys, remember, this is my first time being a parent to a 6-year-old. I've never done this before. I'm still learning. Like, I'm not a first time mom. I have 3 kids, right?
Yeah.
But like with my oldest, I'm like, my love, I have never done this before in this space. I'm learning with you and I want to work together with you. I have the resources to help you through XYZ and we're going to do this together. But please, like, I'm going to show you grace in your 6-year-old life and understand that I'm learning too. And they're young. They don't always understand that, right? But I think that just demonstrating that from an early age is really healthy so that they can see it. And there's times where, like, I will apologize to my kids and they'll be like, mommy, I know, I actually saw that you were in a very stressful environment. I'm like, oh, you saw that. Okay, cool. So you're raising conscious children, resilient children, right? By having these conversations and just really letting down your ego and coming from a pure space. I remember when my mom found out that I had started having sex. I remember being so scared, right? I was so scared. And in a lot of ways, like, I was scared of what my parents would say. I was scared of the shame. I was scared of whether they would accept me, you know, in this new journey in my girlhood, womanhood, right? My exploration as a teen. My mom, there was a lot of, like, slut shaming that happened. Mm-hmm. And I remember feeling like, oh my gosh, I can't talk to my mom and I really need my mom.
Yeah.
I really need my mom to help me through this transition that she's been through, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As a woman, like talk to me about it. And it was actually my dad who sat me down and was like, we're going to get through this. Like, this is what's going to happen. We're going to go. We're going to talk about this. And he gave me like, he really sat me down and gave me the life lesson. And so it's just like the example. I think that it's important to note that like all you need is one healthy adult in your life to see a child thrive.
Absolutely. Like,
it takes one really healthy, present, conscious adult to help see a child thrive, you know? And so I think all of this has to do with this larger topic of child trafficking, you know, that we're talking about, because it's all of these parenting styles and parenting choices and awareness in parenting that lead to this much larger, a little bit more severe, if you will, topic of child trafficking, right? And exploitation. So I think it's important that we discuss those microcosms of like everyday day-to-day parenting, because that is what leads to the bigger issue.
Absolutely. And I think when we think about that safe adult, right? Think about, you may be that safe adult for one of your kids' friends, right?
That's right.
The reality is that not every home is safe, right?
That's right.
Every kid is going to have a safe parent that they have in their lives. And so, you know, when we think about kind of what we can do within our community and within our network, remember that you probably have children in your life, whether they're your kids' friends, whether they're someone at your, you know, at church or wherever, on the baseball team, there's probably a child in your life that doesn't have that safe adult.
That's right.
But maybe you can be that person. And, you know, some of the things you can say are, you know, when your kids, especially if they're older and your friends are hanging out, hey guys, I just want you to know, like, we love having you here. We love having, you know, so-and-so's friends over. If you ever need anything, we are here for you. We know we're not your parents. We know you all have parents, but we just want you to know that we're also here for you. We care about you, right? That is a really important message for kids to hear. And even knowing, okay, Mrs. So-and-so told me that I can always go to them. You might think that kids know that, but they don't. We actually have to tell them that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It brings me back to a time like I had to leave my home, my family home, and I didn't know where to go. I went to my neighbor's house and they sat with me all night until like my dad came home from work, you know? And I don't know. It was something maybe intuitive for me that I was like, oh, they're safe people. Like they're safe people. I will never forget that night. Like I truly will never forget that night. And I don't even know their names anymore. Like I literally don't even know. But like they were safe people in my life, you know, that I counted on. So I want to transition into talking about like some of the challenges that we're facing in modern parenting and child safety, like with internet. Like how has the internet changed the game? How has OnlyFans changed the game? How has porn changed the game? Accessibility to porn. You know, porn was just banned in Florida. I have a lot of perspectives on that, like in multiple levels. But like we're talking about child trafficking and exploitation, that to me seems like one of the biggest obstacles in modern parenting and challenges in modern parenting.
Yes. Having your kids exposed to things that you didn't think they were going to be exposed to, sometimes at a really early age is really challenging, right?
Yeah.
I remember having the conversation with my oldest before he got his phone and saying, if you're old enough to have a phone, you're old enough for us to have some conversations. And one of the conversations—
I love that.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's the reality. You're old enough to have a phone. You're old enough to have these frank conversations. And one of the things I said is you can never unsee something, right? So if you're sitting there and you're wondering, should I watch it? Swipe before you question it, because you can never unsee it. And there are things that you will come across in your algorithm that are not going to be acceptable. They're not going to be appropriate for a kid your age. And it might be pornography. It also could be violence. It could be a lot of things. But if you're ever not sure, swipe. Don't pause and see what happens, because you can't unsee it.
That seems impossible, though. Like, teens are naturally curious.
They are naturally
curious. How do we swipe?
The other reality is that we had a conversation about pornography, and I said, you just have to know that that is not how sex actually works. And I said, when you're looking at pornography, a lot of those people are taking drugs for performance enhancement drugs. They have other things going on. Like if you're thinking that that is what sex is going to be like, please don't. Please don't. You're going to get disappointed yourself. You're going to disappoint whoever you're with. Like, that's just not reality. It's entertainment. It's just like movies aren't reality, right? When you go see how people operate in a movie, you know that's not really what happens.
Like when they fall in love and live happily ever after, and you're like, actually, the marriages take a lot of work,
sir. Right. And they never fight, and life is perfect, and they all have enough resources.
Right. Everybody can afford all of the things. You don't have to worry about a budget.
Right. Right. And everyone gets along with their friends and there's no fighting. Right. That's just, and so,
you know, it's not real life.
Some of this is reminding them that, you know, the same way when you look at a television or a movie screen, you know, that's not real life. When you look at a phone, that's not real life either. Right. People only put up and post what they want you to see.
That's right. Right.
They're not posting their whole lives. Yeah. They're posting the best image of themselves or just what they want the world to see of them.
Of course.
Right? And so explaining that to kids, I think, as you give them more access. And the other thing is, you know, one of the things that I always say when I'm talking with parents about things like internet and phone access is start stricter and ease up as they've shown you they can handle it. Right?
Yeah.
If you just hand them a phone with no restrictions on it, no parent controls, have no conversation, you are setting yourself up for disaster because they can't handle it at a young age. And something's going to happen. And then you're going to have to say, now I have to take back your phone and I have to put restrictions on her. I have to take back that app. Better to start off slow, get them really excited about having access and slowly increase as they've shown you they can handle it. And they'll feel proud about themselves too as they do that. Because starting wide and then narrowing is just not, it's setting yourself and your child up for a poor experience.
I have two questions. One is like, do you think that there's an appropriate age to give your child a smartphone?
So I know that there's a wait until eight movement, which is the idea that parents should
Until 18.
Right. I think it really depends on a lot of dynamics. For example, I know a lot of children of divorced parents where that those parents don't have good relationships with their ex-spouses or the other parent and feel like that's the only way for them to get in touch with their child, right? And I know that there are a lot of other situations where children may come home and be at home alone for a while, right? So we waited as long as we could. Our child was 12 when he got his first phone. And, you know, I do think if you can wait, right? If you don't feel like you compelled, like there's a real safety reason to give, wait as long as you can, right? But I also like there's no shame for the parents that feel that there really is a safety issue or their life structure just really does require them to be able to get in touch with their child. What I will say is that the younger the child is, the more restrictions you need to have on those.
Absolutely.
Phone, right.
Absolutely.
And so there are what we did end up giving our child is called a bark phone. And it's a specific phone that if you go on wait till eight, they offer phones that are specifically designed for children. And so this is a bark phone where we get notifications of anything that's inappropriate. So for example, our child sometimes listens to some music that might have a little curse word here or there. We get notified anytime that happens. We get notified if there's bullying that they're seeing through text messaging. We get notified of inappropriate images or Google searches, right? That's what we were comfortable with. And as he gets older, we will, you know, eventually turn him, you know, switch over to another phone. But that's what we were comfortable with in eighth grade. Right. And I think, I mean, seventh grade, if your child is young, they need to have your restrictions. You can type in Virginia and spell it wrong and see a lot.
Yeah. I never thought about that, but yes, mm-hmm. absolutely, yes. Something that has come up for me while you were talking is like also discussing with your children why, what are you seeking? What is your motive? Like, what are you looking to feel? What's the feeling that you're trying to get from this? When I was coaching the dancers, I remember there was an instance where one of my dancers was like, went past the boys' locker room in her leotard, and then a couple of things happened. Mm-hmm. And I had to have a discussion with her about nothing bad happened. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like just mm-hmm. like nothing bad happened, but she came back and she was like telling me, oh, you know, I don't like how this felt. And I was like, okay, when you are walking around in the classroom, like I established a rule of like, if you go walk in the hallways, you got to put your sweatpants on, right? Like leotard, fine, whatever, but we're going to put sweatpants on because we're on the same floor as the boys' gym. It was like it was a middle high school. So there's sixth grade girls walking around with senior boys. These are the boys are 18 years old. So I'm like, the rule now is you go outside of our dance studio, you're putting the sweatpants on. We're not walking around in our tights and our leotards. This is not going to happen, right? And I remember having a sit-down conversation with this young girl, and I'm like, what were you looking for? Like, what did you wander over there looking for in your leotard? And she was like, I really wanted this one boy's attention. And I was like, do you feel like you can only get his attention by walking around in a leotard?
Yeah.
You know, and it was such an awkward thing, right? And it seems like such a benign thing, but it's not. Like, I remember thinking like, let's talk about why. Why are you looking these things up on the internet? Why are you participating in this type of language? What's the root of it? Curiosity is natural. It's normal for girls and boys to like flirt with like, you know, their new identities as they go through puberty. This is normal. And there is a level of sweetness to the curiosity, right? Like, I don't ever want to take away the sweetness of the curiosity, but like, how do we empower then? It just raises the question of like, how do we inspire and encourage our children to come from a place that is pure and self-aware? Like, how do we teach self-awareness in children that is age appropriate? And I think that there's something to be said there in terms of parenting and helping our kids navigate through this time in their lives as access is just more accessible. Access is more accessible.
And how great that you could have that conversation, because again, maybe that's a child who doesn't have a parent that would have had that conversation, right? Maybe that child doesn't have a mom or a dad who would sit there. And it was so great for them to get that insight at such a young age of, why am I doing things? Let me be conscious about why I'm doing things. Let me think about if that's the only way to get what I want or I'm seeking. And if that is that really what I want?
Is that really what I want? Right. Absolutely. Right. It was loaded. And it was also like, it wasn't from a place of shame. And it's wild because I didn't have kids yet, but I was like, there's no shame in this. Like, yeah, I get it. I get it. but we're not going to shame you about what went down in your little prancy prance dance that you did over there by the boys' locker room.
You know,
I'm not shaming you into that.
Right.
Like, where is this motive coming from? I'm not going to shame you into this. I remember feeling, like I mentioned before, a lot of shame from my mom for the things that I was going through. And I was like, we're not going to do shame. We're just going to work through this together. So I think where I want to leave off is giving parents some tools, right?
Yes.
What are, let's say, 3 to 5 ways that you can make an impact on preventing human trafficking and child exploitation?
Yes. Well, I would not be giving all of our amazing comms team and staff their due diligence if I did not tell you that on our website, which is love146.org, right on top, there's a banner where you can actually sign up for emails specifically for parents that really do provide practical guidance about how do you have some of the discussions that we talked about today.
Amazing. Right? I love that that's a resource.
Absolutely. Even in more detail. I think, you know, when we think about practical tools in terms of trafficking prevention, really thinking about talking to our kids, establishing a good connection with our kid. That's the
establishing a good connection with your children.
Talking to your kid about healthy relationships. And I say this both because sometimes we may not be in a healthy relationship.
I was just thinking that.
Right? And so we need to, and maybe it's not us that has that conversation with them, but maybe we implore our sister and their aunt or their uncle, and we say, we need you to have this conversation because I know the situation I'm in is not something that I want for my children, right? But even if we are in a healthy relationship, it might be harder for our kids to identify red flags of an unhealthy relationship unless we tell them, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we actually have to explain what a healthy and unhealthy relationship is. Third, give your kid permission to mess up, to make mistakes. And give them a sense of how you're going to respond when that happens. That is such a gift, right? Such a gift to a child. And then the other thing I want to say that I think is really important is have grace with yourself, right? Yeah. Allow yourself the fact that we're all figuring it out. We all mess up. If you've had trauma in your past, if you feel that trauma coming back up, you can always go seek out support for yourself. right? If you're not sure what to do, but you haven't had trauma in your past, you can seek out support for yourself, absolutely, right? Absolutely. I think there's this sense that we sometimes, you know, we put pressure on each other as parents to do it the right way.
Yeah.
And the reality is there's no right way.
Right. That's right.
Right. We have
so many different ways to get to where you want to go. And there's so many different healthy ways to get there.
Absolutely. We all have different kids, different dynamics in our personal relationships, different access to resources. We're just trying to figure it out, but sometimes we all need a little help. And so I think, you know, permissioning parents to seek out that help, whether it's by listening to your podcast, whether it's by reading a book, whether it's by going to therapy, right? And talking about things that are coming up that maybe they didn't even realize would come up as their parenting.
Yeah. Erin, thank you so much. This has been so insightful. I'm so glad that we got to have this conversation. I think that it's really important for parents to hear. I would like for all parents who are listening to go check Erin out and the cause that she's getting behind, because it's really, really important work. And I think that we all have a lot to learn, even if it's hard, even if it's difficult, even if it's scary. I think that that might be the biggest thing, is that it's scary, right?
Yeah.
Like the idea, the topic is a scary one that we would rather not deal with. But I think it's really important for us as parents to tackle it, to at least have the information. At the very least, you have the information, and then we'll go from there, like baby steps. It doesn't have to be all things all at once. Like one step at a time, one day at a time, we can get there and we can raise healthy, resilient children and put them in a space where they can feel empowered to make safe choices for themselves.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Erin, thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Becoming Her podcast. If you love this episode, share it with a friend who may need to hear what we spoke about today. And if you really love this episode, make sure to leave a 5-star rating and a review. Your comments are so important and valued, and they give other listeners insight on what to expect from Becoming Her. If you're looking for deeper connection, check out the Becoming Her exclusive online community, where you will meet with me and other like-minded, mission-centered women who are on the journey to the biggest, most glorious homecoming and glow up. You can connect with me personally on Instagram at Nikki Sapsbo and @becoming_her. For more information on all of the things, visit nikkispo.com. My hope for you today is that you are courageous and looking inward so that you can be your highest, most authentic self and go after the life of your dreams.